is part of a series of oral histories compiled by the Branch County Public Library to ensure the historical recording of the various personalities in Branch County that have had an effect upon its history. These tapes are stored in the Heritage Room of the Branch County Library in Coldwater, Michigan. This tape was an interview by Cranston Wilcox, a member of the Oral History Committee, of Hale Pierce, a longtime active community citizen of Coldwater and Branch County, who was a soil conservationist for the Branch County District for many years. This tape was made on January 11th, 1984, in Coldwater, Michigan, and the interview begins on this tape at approximately a tape meter reading of 45. The retired soil conservation specialist. What is your proper title to start out with, Hale?
Soil conservationist.
Soil conservationist. Branch County for how many years?
Well, I worked here 24 years.
And retired from the position, right?
Right. No. 4 years previously, soil conservation, or district conservationist in Cass County before it came here.
Was that Melvin Cass County, or just you?
Well, I started in Cass County.
Cass County District, right?
Yes.
Well, give us a little of your family background first to start the record off, Hale, and a little of a personal account, then some account of your experiences prior to here, and then we'll move into the experiences in Branch County District.
Well, I was raised on a farm in Hillsborough County. Attended Michigan Agricultural College when I first started, and graduated from Michigan State College on my diploma, and I taught vocational agriculture for 16 years before changing. Worked with the U.S. Department of Agriculture as a soil conservationist.
The schools you said were Grant, Peck, and?
And a little town up in Gratiot County a couple of years.
But then the district in Cass County was your first position was the federal government soil conservation
That's
service.
Right. I started there in 1944.
Was this a new service then, or relatively new, the Soil Conservation Service?
Well, the district in Cass County was composed of just four townships when I went there. And I was district number 13 of all the districts in Michigan.
That tells it.
Because the enabling legislation was passed by Congress in 1935. Called the Soil Conservation Act. And Michigan then established the Soil Conservation District Law in 1937. So I wasn't one of the first ones, but I started back in some of the early years of the soil conservation movement here in the state of Michigan. Those first years, I think they set up some demonstrations areas. There were three of them here in Michigan. One was at Benton Harbor, one at Grand Haven, and one at Holland.
Did you work on any of those?
No, I had some training over at Benton Harbor under Worship Bryan and fellows that worked there. And since then, I think they told us the other day there are 81 districts in the state of Michigan now. A couple, three counties that have more than one district.
So out 83 counties are probably covered then, aren't they? Tell us the concept the concept of soil conservation as the federal program started was to do what?
We started after the Dust Bowl days of the 30s, and even in this area they were wiping dust off windowsills that came from west of the Mississippi. We started as an erosion control service back along with the CCC program ideas because of the erosion problems, not only water but dust at that time. As it was set up, the Soil Conservation Service was a branch of the United States Department of Agriculture, the same as Farmers Home Administration and Agricultural Conservation and Stabilization Organization. Even in funding, the Cooperative Extension Service is a branch of the United States Department of Agriculture. Forest Service, there are a number of different agencies under that umbrella. And of course, the pioneer, many of us had the privilege of listening to who he was, a missionary, was Harry Bennett. He traveled the country preaching the problems of soil conservation, the dust, the water erosion problems of his country.
What was his background, you know?
I guess I can't answer. He was a writer. He has a number of books he was a true evangelist of soil conservation. But the movement spread rather slowly. I came here in 1949, and this was district number 40, and number 13 over at Cass Hopkins. So in those first 10, 15 years, the movement spread rather slowly.
Was it new here when you came in 49?
Yes. Gordon Chabitis and Lee Rosenkrantz from the Soil Conservation Service and two others had done the background work. We had to have a referendum. Farmers voted on it. I guess the first day was a pretty bad March day, and they held another one a few days later. That was the establishment of the district here in Branch County.
Well, it was voluntary at that time.
It always has been.
Always has been. Voluntary both on the part of the county. Well, we'll have a district and voluntary on the part of the individual cooperator. Is this true?
That's right. And in the years I worked here, I never went on a farm, or we did not, the district did not have a formal request from the farmer.
You mean written?
Written request. That's right. The district application form, they called it. And my work was entirely through the Soil Conservation District. The district directors had to approve these requests, and we went from there.
When a farmer signed up to be a cooperator, what responsibility did that entail for him?
Well, he generally indicated the things he was interested in. Coming back to this missionary aspect, in the first years I worked here, and also in the years over at Cass County, it was standard procedure to establish little neighborhood groups. Find who the leader of the kingpin was out in an area, and ask them to call a group of their neighbors together. And those meetings would be in afternoons or evenings, many of them evenings, and we'd hold a series of four, five, six meetings just discussing the general aspects of
Just to explain the program.
Land conservation and whatnot. Two Wells Creek. I think that was one of the ways I became well acquainted here in Branch County. Just sitting down with Coop farmers, generally, often a cup of coffee, or sometimes they'd housewife would become quite hospitable and we'd have cake and ice cream.
Hard on the girls, wasn't it?
But a lot of night meetings when you talk about compensatory overtime, even what that was. The well meetings pretty much over the county for the first years, and our work was not only in the field, but around the kitchen table. I think that's where I became acquainted with. Probably as well acquainted in Branch County as most anyone ever been. Some of the names you might recognize back in those early days on the first board. And at that time, when they started out, the State Conservation Commission, I guess it was, appointed three members and two were elected in the county. Now, following that, they were all elected, but the first board was Garrow Heinbaugh.
I knew him, yes.
Let's see, Garrow. Warren Bidwell, who passed away the other day.
Yeah.
Frank Stauder, up northwest of town, northeast of Coldwater. Clark Corley, who was a longtime figure.
Kinderhook Way.
Kinderhook, and Star Copeland, who lived west of Madison Lake. That was our first board. They were pretty well scattered over the county.
Yes.
And some of them even organized neighborhood groups in their neighborhood. And following that, some of the other names at early days, Guy Bailey was in good help out west of town. And, old Jake Kerman up in Arthur Jones area.
Sure would, that would be warm.
Yeah. Elmer Dunbrock, south of Quincy,
yes.
He's kind of the head of the clan of the Dunbrocks. Holden Noble, now we call Will Kepler. And of course, Norm Bidwell was not too far east of Lawrence. Those are some of the people we started with, little neighborhood groups, and expanded that.
They were the key people to start with, weren't
they? That's what we tried to get.
Yes. It's an interesting way to approach it. So the democratic approach without the exact opposite of the, let's say, totalitarian Russian approach where you appoint your volunteers. To starting with zero cooperators, do you have any figure of mind roughly as to how many cooperators you reached at the peak?
Well, I guess I couldn't come up with
just on a, maybe on a percentage.
Well, you generally shot for 40 or 50 new ones a year, even though these groups have. Keep adding new people who might be interested to your list.
When you did that, did you still, did the old one still stay in, or was it a completion deal?
Oh, you seldom reached completion, I guess. It always.
For most of them.
Yeah.
Continued to do little things, even if just in the way they plowed or something like that, right?
Or stop back by to give them a little encouragement.
Yeah.
And after a year or two, that's where conservation aid came into the picture to do some of that back on the farm colony as well as for me. Dick Schemmel, of course, you recall, was the guy that was assigned here to do this back on the farm colony and also help with the layout of practices as well.
You actually gave a direct service to the farm on the methods for following good soil conservation practices. Is that correct?
And of course, these neighborhood meetings, to point out, made a better way of putting it, to develop an awareness of some of these problems. You can live with something and never ever see it. In fact, I've been accused of being able to smell out a gully when the farmer didn't know it was there.
Probably. Did the ASCS and the SCS have any drug relationship?
Well, in recent years, with the cost-sharing practices that ASCS have had, the technical part of a number of them was turned over to the Soil Conservation Service. So that, and when that happened, you could be working on farms, or possibly it wasn't a district request to go on. It was part of the USDA agreement that SCS would carry out the technical part of.
The request had come through the ASCS, didn't it?
Yes. In some cases, and often, if we were on a farm and saw the need for a waterway, why don't you go in and make a request for cost-sharing payment on it and get some help in doing it. So it worked both ways. And when that cost-sharing began to cover some of the permanent practices on farms.
Before I forget it, would you say that the program now in 1984 is still active in Branch County, Soil Conservation Program?
It's a different program now than it was in the years I worked at it, I'm sure.
In what way? Is less voluntary or?
Well, I'm a little hesitant to be very specific about it, but one of the changes, instead of working over the county, and that was one of the things we were encouraged to do, is to work in all the corners. Now they more or less have picked specific problem areas, two or three or four, and concentrate more of the work in those areas.
How do they decide what the problem area, do you know?
No, I'm not sure. It's a matter of judgment, I guess.
I'm
just backing up, I had a note here on this meeting around the neighborhoods. One of the places that stands out in my mind, do you remember the Dutch Settlement School?
Yes, I do. I've been in it many times.
And that was one of the places we had quite a number of meetings. Gerard Heimbaugh was...
That was Noble Township.
Down there. It was the guy that we met at the schoolhouse. Noble Town Hall, I think it's Mudsock School building, some of those buildings where years past where we sat down.
Well, at one time there were 76 open one-room rural schools in Branch County. They were the community center in some cases. This is where you say you often met.
Well, it was sometimes we picked, I think it was just a little more informal for on someone's kitchen table,
right,
and someone's home. But that was part of the pioneering world. Of course, the thing that puzzled people in this county when the district was set up, no one ever had any particular answer for it, were these wet hills. You went into that as well.
See, many wet hills where you dig a hole on top of the hill and fill with water.
In the contention, you were often told that you couldn't put tile in that land, that it was so tight water wouldn't reach the tile. And in the light of that, I think it was Ted McCann. He used to have his John Deere equipment. He rounded up all over Western Michigan a subsoil tiller. That's something that was deep shanks. And with George Matthews, he went out on the wet hills. And
that's in Batavia Township, right?
Brooklyn Union.
Union Township.
And, they had one of the bigger tractors hooked on that, tried to go across and break up the subsoil. And it was too much for that tractor. They had two tractors hooked on it, and finally could move across the field.
How deep were they?
Oh, about 24 inches or about. You could feel the ground.
Down in heavy clay, were they?
In that tight layer.
Yeah.
Underneath. And then Jim Porter, I think it was, from the Soils Department of Michigan State University, came in with some plaster Paris blocks and recording devices, and George recorded the moisture content of the surface soil and that subsoil over a period of time. see whether there was any change and whether it allowed moisture to go down in that land. Another thing we tried to keep to break down into it was a deep terrace across our way down the hill, so whether that would pick up the water.
Did it?
No, not particularly. Those were some of the things we observed.
Are you saying then, as far as experience was concerned, you never did find a good way to drain a wet hill?
Well,
practical way?
I think we found that tile would work.
Would work.
On those slopes if they're put in properly. Another thing that was tried out on some of this wetter lowland was a system of bedding, it was a matter of plowing narrow lands and keep increasing the back furrow and increasing the dead furrow. I still notice it out here on Warren King's farm. Every time in the summertime I go north, those fields, that lowland was covered that way. And waterways, we used to brag that our Jones had the longest continuous sod waterway in the state of Michigan over there.
Your aim there was to get drainage without erosion, is that
right?
That's right. And that's why you sod it. Did you ever pave them with rock and so forth?
Far be it. Get the rock out and get sod on them.
Get sod. Because why?
The rock exaggerates some of the problems rather than stops it. There are a lot of sod waterways over Banks County today. That one R. Jones worked on was, I think, 3/4 mile long.
That's very interesting, because that's one of the things that I think when you talk to people, as I have recently, about soil conservation, the first and sometimes sadly the only thing that comes to your mind is something that is visible on the highway, and that's contour plowing. They can understand that contour plowing prevents, is aimed at least, to prevent the gullying that they've seen over their past years. And you have many other things than that in your program, right?
Well, as far as erosion, which you're speaking of, anything you can do to make water is you often put a drop down instead of running. When it gets to running, it picks up a load of silt and the fine particles of soil. The mud is in there and carries it down. I don't know, you'd be interested in this on tile. There wasn't much tiling done. Occasionally someone would run a 10-rod line, hire a backhoe, or else put them in by hand. That's kind of...
By guess?
Some of it, yes. So, there was a fellow in Angola that had a tile machine. We arranged an evening meeting, twilight meeting, for a tile machine demonstration. This was out on Fred Holmes' farm, down in Quincy, Allegancy.
Someplace down in there.
And I don't know whether it was Gordon or who followed Gordon as county agent here. Wasn't before Paul Thompson's time. They didn't think much of the idea, but the crowd that turned out to see that tile machine work was very surprising. It wasn't long after that that four farmers over by Union City went together and bought a tile machine. So it was Ed Carpenter, if you remember young Ed, his father, Jake Kerman, Fred Gray.
Yes, Fred Gray, the supervisor from Union County.
Murray's father. And Albert Hollister. The old farmers went together and purchased this machine out of Wisconsin. And that was the only machine for several years that worked in the county. As I understood, last year they had 6-8 of them working around. But that was kind of the beginning of tiling this land. And the only tiling that was done, of course, this little campbell farm out here east of town was well tiled by hand once upon a time. And most of those tile lines ran up and down the hills.
It doesn't run uphill very well, does it?
runs down, and our work on it was to run the tile lines around the hill and put the ladders that came down. One of the first places that was done with a backhoe was out on Harold Pierce's land. I recall Harold shaking his head about running around the hill, but it didn't work. And well, some of the pioneering on getting tile on this land.
The basic idea there of that pilot program was to move the water out of the area so that the land could be farmed successfully, right?
Well, and also to be able to grow some alfalfa to help loosen it up. It was too wet for somewhere to grow alfalfa. And you read a lot now about minimum tillage and plow plant.
Yes.
All the magazines carry articles. It's probably the best conservation practice on this grain crop farming that they have. There was an innovator over at Winston Bronson, Virgil Maxwell, you ever hear of that? Over by Shawtown. Shawtown School was another one I went to. Virgil had a two-row planter, a horse-drawn planter, and on the land it was pretty hard to work down. He went in and planted corn right on the furrows with that two-row planter, a horse-drawn planter, full-base tractor. The tractor wheels were doing a little packing in front of the planter. And Virgil grew a very good crop of corn.
That's all he did.
And following that, well, a lot of farmers tried it. Fred Dunk was another that got into plow planting. Rather quickly, and Leo Sanderson. It spread pretty well, but there were some problems along with it. And then the no-till thing, you read about that occasionally, just going in and planting even on meadowland and spraying, the sprays that come along and spraying to kill the vegetation. Again, Virgil Maxwell bought an Alice Chalmers no-till planter, I don't know how many years ago, long before the booster came along. He planted a lot of corn just without plowing or doing a thing, just going in and
successfully
planting and spraying. One of the things he claimed, he was going on a wet field, and today plant as much as he could, and as it began to dry out, he'd back and plant more.
Keep going, pull and pull.
And another one that did it was Fred Becker, who lived on the old Fred Helen farm, that's part of the family. Fred went in an alfalfa field with no-till planter. He had a good crop.
Where was he located?
Well, this tile, the same field, in fact, that this tile was put in the demonstration area.
Yeah.
That was probably, I guess, 17, 18 years ago. Some of the people now think it's a new idea that they developed. Those two farmers had those no-till planters.
It worked.
New ones look better, of course.
What about the claim that we occasionally hear nowadays that the drainage, original drainage devices that were installed are partly at least responsible for the necessity for irrigation on these farms? They drain the water away too fast, and therefore we have to come up now in dry years and irrigate. Is there anything to that?
Well, land that needs irrigation surely doesn't need tile for the most part.
So there was no...
I don't think there's any correlation.
Yeah. In other words, the irrigation now is not being required in areas that were drained ordinarily.
No, because you're dealing with an entirely different soil problem there.
Well,
think of another innovation. Here in the county, Boyd Wiggins and I guess promoted this. District directors spent quite a little effort on it, set up ladders and whatnot on airplane seatings of cover crops on corn fields.
What point during the crop?
Well,
afterwards?
We started about the last of August, the 4th of September is when we hoped to get it. First year, there were 200-300 acres, but then at least several thousand acres from last I know.
This is to counteract the washing and that occurs in tile fields when you get
grain fields. Corn and bean fields.
Yeah. Grain fields where the land was probably left bare, wasn't it?
With a blanket on it, so they held it down over there.
Does that interfere with next year's crop? Putting that blanket on?
It depends on how quick it was turned under or destroyed. If the lower cages are defined to let it go to seed, and then the nitrogen requirement for that rye would become pretty high.
And what did you seed it with, usually?
No, rye was the base crop.
Annual crop, rye?
And occasionally ryegrass as well.